Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borok Thunga, thanks and welcome to another thrilling episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I'm your host, Mulchar, and this week we're going to talk to two writers who've got not just series in the past for 2000 AD, but also series coming up. Guy Adams, who's the writer on Hope, and James Peattie, who is the writer on Skip Tracer. They're going to be talking about their new series for the world of 2000 AD. Before we crack on with that, however, I want to make sure that you are regularly checking out the news blog on 2000AD.com, where we've got loads of exciting announcements coming up in the next month. You may have seen the news about our free comic book day offering Funny Pages alongside the Core and Buster special. Now, anybody who remembers the humor comics of the 1970s and 80s should be delighted at the news that we are resurrecting a number of characters from the IPC title. Including Sweeney Todler, including Frankie Stein. There's loads of them. Gums as well, the shark with the dentures. That's coming out in April. We've got Free Comic Book Day at the beginning of May with the Funny Pages, which is reprints of some classic stories from the heyday of British humour comics. And we've also got the 2000 AD Villains Takeover Special, which, is pretty special. You should definitely check all of those out in the spring. And if you like t-shirts, you definitely need to check out 2000AD.com's web shop, where we are spending the forthcoming 12 months releasing some brand new t-shirts. The Judge Dredd Any Questions t-shirt by Mick McMahon is now available. Faceache is now available. And we've got more coming up over the next month. So do check those out and get yourself a little slice of thrill power to wear across your chest. Now, we've had Guy Adams on the Thrillcast a couple of times to talk about Hope, but he's got a new series coming out fairly soon, which is The Further Adventures of Max Normal, which any self-respecting Judge Dredd fan will know is the pinstriped freak, the informant that keeps Dredd up to date on what's happening on the ground in Mega City 1. James Peattie is the writer on Skip Tracer, which is in its third series now in 2000 AD and has a new series coming out called Diamond Dogs, which is in the magazine, which takes a look at street-level shenanigans in Britsit. Completely failed to get the right word there, but very much looking forward to these two new series. And so we got both Guy and James on Skype to chat about what they've got coming up for the House of Tharg. It's wonderful to welcome back to the podcast, as he's been on before, Guy Adams. Welcome, Guy.
Hi there. Lovely to be here.
Good, good. And first time on the 2080 Thrillcast, James Peattie.
Virgin, yes, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So we're going to talk about series that are coming up, but first I wanted to just talk a little bit about the series that are ongoing or have been and gone. First off, James, I want to talk to you about Skip Tracer, which is sort of into its is it third story now?
Yes, I think we're halfway through, think, by the time we're talking. Yeah.
Do you want to just, to those who haven't read it yet, do you want to tell us a little bit about Skip Tracer and how it came about?
How it came about, right. Mm. Oh, well, Skip Tracer is it's a sort of, I guess, an action-adventure thriller. Follows a Skip Tracer, sort of bounty hunter, sort of, I don't know, I think how Matt and I described it was sort of like, at the beginning it was a bit like the Rockford Files, but it's not like that at all. But it's, that gives you an idea, it's that kind of, it's in that kind of tradition of series like, I guess, Robo Hunter.
Hmm.
And there's a little bit of Strontium Dog in there as well, in that there are, that they do jobs that are brought to them. So there's a kind of notionally Nolan, who's the lead character, Nolan Blake, who's got this kind of mysterious military past and some sort of psychic powers, is kind of, he's engaged in transactional relations for whatever case he's following, but it's usually, that doesn't really ever kind of come into it very much. So it's kind of an action adventure thing, really, with that character. And we've set in this, the cube, this sort of, we described it, the biggest sink estate in space. And that's kind of it, really. And we've been kind of sort of seeding in some longer term kind of backstory aspects as we've sort of moved along. That's my wife texting me, sorry about that. And that sort of developed. So we're on the third book now. Sort of book two and book three have sort of run pretty much back to back, which was quite an ordeal over the summer to get them. They were sort of commissioned together. So we're sort of writing them together, which was quite... And we've had... Paul Marshall's drawn two books, the first book and the third book. And we had Colin McNeil on the second. And that's... It's what can I say other than it's been the last 15 months. It's been that series. So, and I'm just about today to start writing the next one. So there you go.
I mean, you've mentioned some classic 2000 AD stuff in there. Are there any kind of other influences that you're drawing on for something like this? Because I'm picking up the kind of almost now obligatory kind of Blade Runner feel to the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I think in terms of the look of it, I mean, I don't think it's really like... I mean, it's, you know, it's like Blade Runner in the any kind of semi-futuristic kind of private eye thing kind of is a bit like Blade Runner. Mm. I guess there's an element of that. But it's like... it's weird. I was talking about this with someone else recently. I think there's a lot of... I went back... I hadn't read it in years. I looked back at Hitman. You know, the Ennis and McRae series. And I can see there's an element of that in there as well. A little bit of Give Me Liberty as well.
Mm.
So those were sort of things that were sort of hanging around in the background. Maybe not directly 2000 AD influences, but certainly creators who, you know, are quite, you know, widely associated with 2000 AD. So definitely, I think, in that kind of feel to it, it was definitely that. There's things like, you can see a bit of Rogue Trooper in there because there's a bit of... there's a bit of outer space war lurking in the background, which we've sort of hinted at but not really picked up on so far. But I think we might play that note a little bit more as we move forward. So that really, I mean, those kinds of books as well. I mean, I would say really the influences, I would say really primarily comic book influences actually on this. That's definitely what we were talking about when it was first kind of commissioned at sort of, I spoke to Matt at a convention, the only time I've ever met Matt, which was for about 3 minutes, an idea of that type of character sort of that's kind of at the center of it, you know. I think Nicola Dante was mentioned as well, even though it's nothing like Nicola Dante.
was
that kind of lead character, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Was the intention that this would run for several series, or has it been kind of as things have moved along, Matt's gone, oh, I'd like another series?
Yeah, I mean, when we did it, which was sort of like end of 2017, I think it was commissioned. It was one story. And then I sort of sounded him out about a second one. Did he want to do that? And he said yes. And then he sort of dropped on me, I'd like to commission sort of the second and third sort of together, if you can do that. So then it kind of became a bit more, you're thinking about it in slightly larger terms. And we had a chat the other day about what we do moving forward. But it's always been very organic. So I wrote the first one thinking, well, if it never comes back, it never comes back. And each book is very much self-contained. But I'd say now we're starting to kind of lay some longer-term seeds and foundations for what we do. I've got the next few kind of – we've talked about that. So there's a kind of direction that it's moving in.
Okay. And – You've done a lot of work on Doctor Who comics for Titan. Was it different coming to do a weekly serialized story after doing kind of monthly comics?
It's very different. I think when you're writing an ongoing, I mean, the stuff I've done for Titan or Doctor Who, they've all been pretty much done and dusted in a single issue. Even the miniseries that came out end of last year, they were self-contained stories. I mean, this is much more like when I did Supergirl for DC, quite a long time ago, about 2011. That was very much, you were thrown into the sort of schedule, and you had to make sure the book came out. So in some respects, this is more like that, but much, much harder. because the format of 2000 AD is so unforgiving. The 5-page increments. I mean, even if you compare it to writing for the magazine, when you're writing in sort of 8-page chunks, that feels very, very different. That's different again, and less kind of pressured. The 2000 AD, I think it really finds you out, whether you can do it, like in terms of getting it in on time, but also how you then kind of build that over the course of a series. Certainly, I think it's the weekly format is one side. The size of the episodes is the key thing, actually. I think that's the biggest change, I mean, that you have to adjust to. And it did. I'd done a few things before I wrote this. I'd done a few Future Shocks. I'd done a thriller as well. And that was, so that kind of was, you get used to writing to that. But when you're still kind of building something that's got to play out over like 9 or 10 parts, then yeah, that's different. You kind of have to sort of just adjusting to the pace, really. Although writing an ongoing series in lots of ways is easier than writing something that's much shorter. So a Future Shock is very hard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as attested by many, many, many people. So with Skip Tracer, do you have an endpoint in mind, or is it a bit more open than that?
I've got an endpoint in mind. I'm not sure. It was the Farg's got to agree to that, hasn't it? I've talked about the next kind of big kind of point that we want to take it to, I think, in the kind of the medium term. I've got an idea about how I'd like it to develop, but it's like anything, it kind of changes. You don't want to be locked into that. I've got an idea about how it kind of finally resolves, but again, it's all in the telling, so a lot of it will change. There's a shape to it. I kind of know where I want to take it, but you know, things can change. This is, as we know from the history of the comic as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about creating new characters, new stories, but we'll just move on to Guy for a moment, because obviously we've talked about Hope on the podcast before. I just wanted to sort of get an update on future plans for the series, because if we've had the collection of the first story come out, which was very well received, what's next for the series?
The second series is written, which is different enough, I hope, to the first one that it's has moved on a little bit. And at the moment, Jimmy's drawing it. He is conjuring his special Hope ink from, you know, the nether levels of hell, or Birmingham. He's a Midland. He's around that area, Tipton. So, you know, I don't know what occult process needs to happen for him to get the pages done. But that's what he's up to at the moment.
Right. Well, I mean, Aleister Crowley was from Hastings, so, you know, you never know where the Dark Lord will find his servants.
Well, no, I famously made it so that no one else could leave Hastings, which is quite cruel. Except my partner kind of almost did. That's ongoing, and there are plans for further stories. I got very excited. It's like James says, you're never quite sure where you're going to go with something, but whenever I've written stuff for 2000 AD, I'm always got an eye on the fact that you know, it might go down well, and therefore it should continue and keep flourishing. You always got to make sure you've got enough space to keep expanding and building. So, yeah, Hope's got legs as long as Jimmy's got fingers.
That's a title.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy's got fingers. If he has to give up, you know, art, then perhaps that's his specialist Vimeo channel that can pay the bills. I don't know.
And are you going to be drawing in other influences? Because obviously there's a very heavy James Ellroy kind of pulp noir influence with the first series. Are you moving things on in terms of what the kind of things you're drawing on, or is it still very much embedded in that kind of LA noir world?
I'm adding different flavours. It is still very much that. But I mean, the second book is brings a lot of the war elements that were just kind of skirted around in the first series. We see a bit more of the war in the second one because it has a bearing on the current case. And if the first one was very Hollywood-led, this one's actually more of a gangster picture, I suppose. But it still has that same aesthetic. You know, I can't keep Jimmy away from the sight of light passing through Venetian blinds, wilting pot plants, and shadows of banisters on walls. You know, he loves his noir, as do I. So, I mean, it's always going to have that feel to it. It's always going to be... it's going to smell of whiskey, sweat and smoke.
I mean, this kind of leads me on to what I said I was going to ask about, which is about crafting new stories and new characters for 2000 AD, because, you know, I've been doing the 2000 AD ABC videos for several years now, and we're looking to restart them by focusing on stories that we've missed, but there's just so many. You know, this could go for years and years and years. So we've not had a shortage of stories. But I wanted to get your viewpoints on the challenges of crafting characters that stick, that have longevity. Because obviously, you know, Skip Tracer, we're into the third series. There's a fourth one coming, with hope there's a second series. What do you think is the secret for creating a character that's got legs?
Do you want me to? Shall I say?
Yeah, you go first, James.
Go for it. Right. I think a lot of it's to do with the world they inhabit. I think you've got to give. You've got to also. I think the lead character's got to have. I don't think you can show all your hand in the first story. I think you've got to kind of leave space there. Let them be very proactive in that first story. This, I think this is just from my own kind of experience with it, but I think leaving the space for you then to fill in the gaps, but not even just that, really. I mean, I think when you're thinking about it at the start, you want to kind of come up with a world, a sort of milieu, a precinct, or whatever it is, that you just think that's got space. So when I did Skip Tracer, the key thing that locked it into place was the cube. And it's like that you can go, how big is it on the inside? Well, it's as big as you really need it to be. So you can have lots of different things that you can kind of work within. But that's sort of set up right at the start. And then that sits within a broader kind of universe. And we've sort of mentioned things so that you can then start to pull in that. And then you can sort of pull in your character's past. I think it's got it. You've got to kind of have an organic kind of shape to the world that you build. You know, if you write a thriller or something like that, then really everything it fits in within. It's just literally the plot that you're telling, the story that you're telling. I mean, not just the plot, but it's, you're by nature creating a much more kind of restricted frame. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think with when you're creating a series, you want to try and give as much, don't limit yourself, I think, is really the thing. I mean, I don't know. You've gone through on the A to Z and the ABC of the series. So in, you know, how many series has 2000 AD published? You know, that have come back.
I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you, but that's keep
you busy for years.
But the ones that come back and have come back, you know, for several books. I mean, actually, there's one I was thinking of when you think about. Like, take a series like Nemesis. You know, that's something that grew very organically. And yet, you could have prefer sort of parts of it. But if you look at, say, those first six books of Nemesis, you can see it kind of growing on the page, can't you? And yet, it still kind of ties right back to what they did right in those early strips.
I think it's like you say, though, if it's character and world, then that's just just a rolling ball of story. If you're creating a story that's about story, if it's about the structure of a beginning, middle, and end, that, you know, all the parts hinge on one another to complete the math sum of that story, then it is, it's a single unit. Whereas, you know, the likes of Pat Mills with Nemesis, he knew to just come up with a wonderful world, a wonderful character, call the series after the character, which I love that that's one of his main advice. And you're proving him wrong, James. You're proving him wrong. But, well, kind of not, I suppose.
I think it's not. You know, he opens his shirt and there's an ST in the middle. You know,
But you're crafting a space to play in, and I don't think you can ever predict whether something will be successful. I don't think you can predict whether other people will like. You know, we've all, I'm sure, written stuff over the years that we've gone, I'm pleased with that. For once, I'm actually quite happy with that. I don't know about you, James, but I'm a typical writer that tuts at myself more often than I smile. Mm. But, you know, you sort of think, I've got something there, and then everyone hates it. Or vice versa, you think, that wasn't me on form there. I don't think I've done a very good job. And then that's the one that becomes popular. You can't second guess audience too much, I don't think.
No, I think that's true, yes.
You just have to hope that if you're building a character in a world that you're happy to spend time with that character or set of characters, and you're happy to stay in that world, then other people might be willing to join you. And I don't think you can pick the tone of 2000 AD easily. I was talking to Abnett, the Abnett droid, the other day. We were talking about the flavor of 2000 AD and how, like any anthology, as soon as you try and go, that's what 2000 AD feels like, you're actually probably doing the wrong thing.
Mm.
Because an anthology does need to have a mixture of tones and flavors and stories. So it's almost a case of trying to think what 2000 AD is and then do something that's not that. Because
and also something
that will benefit the anthology.
But also something that is your kind of version of that as well. I think that's the key thing. You look at Hope, I think Hope's very much, that's what comes through. There's a very strong voice, but it is, and it, you think, yeah, that is a 2000 AD strip, but it isn't really a one I've seen before.
No, it's very us, you know.
Yes.
And luckily, you know, we both have 2000 AD baked into us, and so therefore that's not necessarily a contradiction. But yeah, I know what you mean.
So let's move on to things that are coming up. Because Guy, you're resurrecting is the wrong word because he never went anywhere. But you're bringing back the dapper informant Max Normal from the pages of Judge Dredd. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the strip and why you've chosen to bring him out the shadows and the shuggy hole?
Well, it was I think people that have read my stuff will probably not be surprised to know that there's a period of 2018, isn't that sort of early 80s to sort of late 80s, just being nostalgic, that I'm particularly plugged into that world of Judge Dredd. I like the absurd mega city. And Max Normal was always just a very dear character to me, and also to Ben Wilshire. And so the two of us, a few years back, were talking about we should do something with Max Normal. And we pitched to the Noble Tharg the idea of doing a one-off, which we did for one of the specials, one of the Christmas issues. I forget which one. I apologize, but it was just a fun idea to sort of dip our toes in that more humorous and yet satirical and just playful area of Mega City. And it riffed very much off the first Max Normal story, and I created a new character. We created a new character for it, Vito. A monkey, a talking monkey, of course, because that's normal in Mega City, because monkeys are gangsters, and it's all just lovely. And we did this sort of 10-page thing, and that was marvellous. And then it kind of hung there, and Matt mentioned a couple of times, would I be interested in doing it as a series? And it's a case of, the fun thing about Max is that it was a character that would turn up for a few pages in an annual or in a special, or no one ever kind of thought about Max as a character for long form storytelling, because if you're not careful, it could easily be one note in Pinstripe. You know, there's quite broad character beats to a Max Normal. And so if you're doing it as a series, you have to find a bit more, you have to find more layers, you have to find more character. And so it's kind of tapping into that was the, what make the decision as to whether it can work as a series or not. Hopefully, myself and Dan Cornwell this time around have done that. It's still got that sort of fun that you would expect with Max, but it's also got a seriousness that I think will surprise some people. There's a mixture of tones to it. We'll see.
It's one of the things that is most striking about the character is the distinct voice that he's always had, that Alan Grant and John Wagner gave to him. How much is that a challenge, and how much is it a gift?
To be honest, it is a challenge, and I've cheated slightly because I've actually, if anything, I've made it more difficult for myself, a bit stupid like that. But there is a feeling in those early Max stories that he's speaking very much in a job I've taught kind of blaxploitation way. And obviously the fun at the time was this, you know, pinstripe, boring businessman talking as if, you know, he was kind of in a Shaft movie. There was elements of that anyway. And I very much try to push it more towards that sort of jazz, jive, a sort of a more Tom Waitsy kind of rhythmic, I forget, there's a proper brilliant name for it, but I'm a writer, so we have to look those things up before we say it. I have no idea, I can't recall the word for it. But that kind of working with rhythms and patterns within the structure, so it's not just rhyming couplets, it's looking at the actual, the syllables and the beats of everything he says and does. And that can take forever. It really can. And you can't overplay it. You don't want every episode to feature some big moment where he has a long speech that has a lot of syncopation and rhyme. It has to be used at specific moments. But yeah, it's not dialogue that you can rush. Yeah, it's a particularly foolish thing for a freelance writer. Never come up with a character where you really, really have to spend a long time over their dialogue. That's I shot myself in the foot there.
And what's the appeal of a character like Max Normal to you? I mean, you've already written him. Is there a kind of Shuggy playing shadow informer lurking in your personality?
Yes, and I think the main appeal is actually the fact that he solves things using words. You know, what writer's not going to find that? You know, he talks a solution. You know, he—that's his one gift. His gift is his gift is his brain. But he's not a violent. Man, he doesn't carry weapons, he doesn't, you know. Mega City One is just the most awful, awful place. So someone that walks through the middle of this grinding, oppressive, hateful, just grot of tower blocks and death, with a pinstriped suit, a well-pressed shirt, and beautiful language, loving beauty, because that's the other thing, is Max is obsessed with beauty. He's an aesthete. You know, it's the food he eats, the sham with an SH, pain that he drinks. It's all about refined tastes. And in a world where that should no longer exist, that's really appealing. You know, he shines. I think that's fun. And to pair him up with Vito, which is quite intentionally, I mean, Vito, who comes back for this series, is as coarse and earthy as you'd expect any New York ape to be. the balance between the two, the flavor of the language of the dialogue between the two, hopefully, is like ping pong ball bouncing across the page.
Are there risks associated with using sort of bit part characters the very kind of mystique and uniqueness of them will be diminished by shining a light on them for too long?
I think it depends on the character. I mean, in some cases, if a character is defined by their mystery, then yes, obviously doing this is pure instant death. When a character is defined by a beautifully crafted set of broad strokes that, when dropped into a story, create fun. You know, if it's the sort of dramatic equivalent of an Alka-Seltzer that you throw into a glass of water, then you're just trying to find a different rhythm for that. You're trying to, if you're going to tell a 60-page book rather than a 5 or 10-page story, you all you're going to do is hopefully make a character more interesting. You're not going to break them at that point. You're just going to expand. Because, you know, I'm sure there are lots of, I'm trying to think of one now, and of course my slow, wet brain won't manage, but there will be perfect megacity characters, perfect Judge Dredd characters that you think actually to, you know, expand that character would be to dilute rather than enrich. Mm. Hopefully, and this is always a, you know, a risky thing to say, hopefully Dan and I have enriched Max rather than diluted him. We'll see.
Mm. Mm. Brilliant. But I want to move on to James now, because Guy, you've taken an existing character. James, for your new magazine series, Diamond Dogs, you're making it, making a new character, but just in the world of Judge Dredd. Do you want to tell us a bit about the new series that's coming up?
Yeah, it's sort of halfway through it at the moment. It's set in Britsit, so it's not in Mega City 1. And it follows this character who's essentially, she's an informer for an undercover judge within a gang. They are the Diamond Dogs. So it's a kind of about... It's that, really. It's looking at that world. The judges are not really in it. They're just sort of like a presence in the distance, you know, sort of looming over everything. And it's really, so it's kind of about crime. It's a very grassroots sort of street level story.
Mm.
And I've always really liked, I'm a big guy. I was talking about, you know, reading 2000 AD from sort of the early 80s to the late 80s. I sort of jumped on, when I was a bit older, probably about 13, 14, in the late 80s, I think it was about 88 when I started reading 2000 AD. It's like Prog 650. I think, isn't that the Dead Man and Necropolis are starting in that one? I'm pretty sure that's what it was. So it's right about that time. And then obviously I was still reading it when the magazine launched. So I've always really gravitated towards the stuff like America and the stuff that John was doing in the magazine. Then that's kind of the Dredd that I really kind of feel sort of quite closely associated to.
Mm.
And obviously at that point, they kind of expanded Britsit with things like Armitage. So I've always had that in the back of my mind, that I thought if I was going to do something Dredd related, that I'd quite like to sort of do that in that sort of milieu. And then sort of finding something that kind of wasn't in there. Obviously you've got Stort, it's the John and Leah's Storm Warning, isn't it? Is the series at the moment that's in there. That's the kind of, I guess, the other Britsit thing. So to do something that's kind of a, you know, complete opposite of that, something very, very different. But that really, I mean, you've got a lot of virgin territory when you're doing that. It's not as well mined, I don't think, as Mega City 1. There are obviously elements of it that kind of play in there. So it doesn't really feel like you're writing in Dredd's world, if that makes sense. Because he's not going to turn up at any point. And none of the kind of other characters. And the sort of the Brit judges are kind of, they're still, despite all these series that we've had, a little bit more maybe amorphous than the Mega City 1 judges. I don't know. It's I think we might kind of deal with the judges a bit more if we do more with it. But this one's kind of very much on the fringes of the world.
Hmm.
But going back to what you were saying about the thing, I mean, I always think of Dredd as being very much, the world itself is like a tragedy with jokes rather than a comedy with, you know, extreme violence in it. It's always, that's how I've always kind of envisaged it, probably because that's when I kind of, that's where I came in as a reader. Hmm. So, that's the type of stories that I sort of gravitate to in that world. Sort of, I was talking to Rob Williams about this the other day, and he sort of nodded and sagely, and then probably thought the exact opposite.
It's interesting that with Diamond Dogs, there is that flavour of what Rob was trying to do with Low Life.
Yes, I guess so. It is actually, and I guess when Rob did that, that kind of hadn't been done, had it, with Big City One that, to that extent at that point. I think one of the reasons why I wouldn't have done that in Mega City One is obviously because he's done that. And also as well, I sort of feel, you know, the Britsit thing, I don't know, I've always felt quite drawn to. Maybe it is reading all of those kind of, you know, that in those first sort of year or two, 3 years of the magazine, there was all of those strips, weren't there? There was Cowhab Justice and was it Britsit Brute and Armitage and all of them. So it was like, you know, before you even get into all the kind of the broader world, but there was a lot of stuff that was there. So maybe that's obviously made an impression on me, you know, back then. But it's, and I just think the British judges look really cool. They're sort of lion helmets. They look kind of dark, but cool.
Britsit, as you say, has always been quite a kind of nebulous concept, because it's when people have explored it before, they've explored it in very specific ways. Some have traded off stereotypes about Britain, you know, the way Britain presents itself. But you've got the kind of extremes. You've got Brendan McCarthy at one end, who did stuff with it was the Atlantis story in Joyce Dredd, which I absolutely adored. And then you've got all the way through to, as you say, sort of Calhab Justice and Britsit Brute and Armitage. Do you think that the nebulous nature of it can make it difficult to ground it in a reality that the readers recognise?
I think you can do. I think there is a danger. Maybe historically there's been a danger in the past where you just play it as, you know, it just becomes a kind of music hall review, doesn't it? That's not what we're doing in this, I have to say. It's that we're sort of doing the opposite. I mean, I really like what John and Leah have done in their strip. I think that's got a sort of edge to it as well. The thing with this, obviously there's gags, but you're thinking about things like with this Clockwork Orange. That was a sort of big sort of note when we were sort of starting to do it, sort of the Blitz Club, sort of all that, the sort of early New Romantics, like for the way the gangs would look and dress. And also was thinking about, you know, Cold War Steve, you know, and his Twitter account, you know, with his wonderful pictures that he's putting up of, you know, Steve McFadden. And have you ever seen those?
Have
you ever seen those on Twitter?
No.
Cold War Steve. He does these amazing photoshopped pictures of, they're like sort of Bruegel sort of pictures, or a bit like Hogarth, you know, they're kind of photoshopped pictures, like Steve McFadden's in every picture, but he'd be in a picture with Cilla Black and with Kim Jong-un. Oh, if you haven't seen them, you've got to look at them. So when I was kind of writing this, that was very much in the back of my mind. It's like, well, what's modern Britain? What's the kind of satire of modern Britain? And we were talking about action as well. The legendary precursor to 2000 AD, that famous cover, you know, the famous Carlos cover. The kids are okay.
Kids are all okay, yeah.
Kids are all okay. So that kind of thing. So it's very much that. A bit of Quadrophenia in there as well. So in terms of the kind of the broader sort of, we're going as far away from the kind of carry on judges, I think would be, is definitely not what we're doing. which I think sometimes can be the easy thing to do. Certainly if it's that you become the tour the nations, isn't it? And you do that. So that's kind of where we go. But to sort of really fit it within that sort of, I think Clockwork Orange, Quadrophenia, that type of thing. That's sort of what we're doing. A bit of Fish Tank as well. The Andrew Arnold film.
Oh, nice.
That turns up.
Right.
So trying to make it very, very British, actually. I think rather than do a kind of pale version of Mega City One, which I would say from my reading of that stuff over the years, that maybe that's the issue.
This is something I've always pondered, whether sometimes British writers find it difficult to write Britsit in the way that they would write about Mega City 1, because Mega City 1 is ultimately a parody of American society. And is it more difficult to take the Mickey properly out of one's own country, one's own culture, in the same way?
I think it might be. Mm. I mean, I think there's also... I don't think you should ever underestimate with Mega City 1 also the allure of it being America. I think there's a parody there, but there's also a slight glamour thing to it as well.
Mm.
The size and the scale and the kind of... It's got a kind of... I think that is a very strong part of Mega City 1's appeal. It's as awful as it is. There's still something quite other about it that is very attractive. I think we don't find our own backyard particularly attractive. So maybe we have more of an issue with glamorizing it or romanticizing it even. I don't know. But I think there is a certain romanticism, certainly to John Wagner's Dread, I think, within that world, as much as there's all the other flavors that are played. And maybe that's not really played in the other kind of mega city context quite as strongly.
It's a complicated dance, isn't it? Sorry.
Definitely.
That thing of, it's kind of, I'm talking about Judge Dredd having that satirical flavor. It's also that just sheer mad creativity of some of the corners of Mega City 1. The idea that the next story is going to introduce something new and absurd in this city. And as you say, you're playing a very complex dance between describing this apocalyptic hellhole that is also alluring, because week after week after week there is something suitably absurd where we can find, if not beauty, at least a grotesque allure in the smoketariums or the you know, Otto Sump, or these you know, I mean, Otto Sump's a brilliant example of it. You know, you're putting ugliness right up front and center and still saying, isn't it fun to look? And I think that's the key to really successful Dread. For me, it's obviously, it's a very personal thing. This is years and years of storytelling from lots of different voices. But anything that evokes that world of the judges, it's dancing this as you do between serious thriller writing and humor. You were talking about Garth Ennis and, you know, his work in there of flipping between the two. And it's something that Wagner's done and Alan Grant has done for so many, many beautiful pages and pages of this paper universe that is so wonderfully expansive now. But it's a complicated thing because they're contradictory, but it's finding that by pushing those two poles together, the moment you hit that, I think it is when it really sparked.
Mm.
Well, also, the moment you hit that with Dredd as well as a character, that's when it really sparks. I think that's what the genius of how it's expanded over the 40 plus years is that if it was just a one note, if you'd been playing one note for that length of time, it wouldn't have worked. You're absolutely right. I think it's that those contradictory impulses are the things that kind of give it its animating force.
Mm.
It'd just be an arsehole with a chin, wouldn't it?
Oh, there have been plenty of stories.
That's another video channel, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's another video channel.
So who's providing the art on Diamond Dogs?
Diamond Dogs is going to be joined by Warren Police.
Mm.
He's doing full colour art as well. So I've seen the first part and it looks really terrific. And I work with Warren on Doctor Who. And I got an email from him when he was finishing up Incognito for Burger Books, to say that he was like looking for things, and he liked working with me, would be quite happy to work with me again. So I mentioned it to Matt that I'd had that email as this was coming up, and lo and behold, here we go. It sort of comes together, and Warren's, you know, he's Warren. It's all of those things. It's great, and it looks, the fact that he's colouring it himself, I'm not sure if he has done that in 2000 AD on the magazine before, but
couldn't tell you. I can't remember.
No, I'm not sure, but I think it looks lovely. So yes, really looking forward to that.
One thing I did want to ask you about is how, because you're both experienced writers, you've come to 2000 AD after having worked on other properties, your own properties, etc. how much has working for 2000 AD changed the way you work, changed your style, if it has?
Go for it, James.
Go for it. Oh, thanks. That's a hospital pass, if ever I heard one.
Such kindness.
The milk of human kindness. I would say it has. I mean, I think coming to it, I think you get to the point a lot quicker. Unlike answering these questions, in terms of right, you get to the point a lot quicker because you have to.
Yeah.
I think you kind of don't luxuriate on ideas. You know, you kind of think, and you talk about getting an idea down and just kind of go with it.
Mm.
I think it gives you a lot of, I think, confidence, because I think that 2000 AD is, you know, it is the last bastion of that kind of tradition in this country. But also as well, you're sharing pages with, you know, still with John Wagner, until recently, Carlos Esquerra, you know, all of those people are still kind of have been around contributing to the comic as well. So, you know, you're not kind of coming into a title that's not got good people working for it.
Mm.
So if you come back in and you do more than, you know, one, you think, okay, well, that's, so confidence, it's like anything for any writer, you know, you always, someone was saying, what do you have to overcome to be a writer? And a lot of it's yourself. Constantly, with every script, with every story, with every outline. And it's like, I think working on this comic, there's so little time to kind of have the luxury of sort of analyzing things. And I mean that in the best possible way, is that you trust your instincts as a creator. And I certainly think that's been a big, that's been a big influence. And I think pacing, I think you know, in this format, you've got to get the pacing right. If you don't get the pacing right, the stories don't really work.
Mm.
In my experience, anyway. Over to you, Guy.
Well, I was thinking about the pacing, because you were talking about near the start, the 5-page structure. And it's a fascinating structure. At the point where that becomes second nature, and then you've just gone to the magazine where all of a sudden you're writing 8 pages, and that must be a bit like, you know, you sprint and then suddenly find you stop puffing and then look up and go, oh, I'm not there. And Max Normal is 6 pages. And it's a really weird thing of, I've been, I think pretty much everything I've done has been 5-page episodes. And all of a sudden you've got that sixth page, and it shouldn't make so much difference. Really shouldn't. If you think about it, just on a mathematical bit, it shouldn't. But it does, rhythmically it does. It's an extra sixth. It's an extra, it's because every time you turn a page, there should be a rhythmic thing that's occurring. There should be a structural change that's occurring when you turn that page. And for that to happen one more time within each significant unit of your story, that then has to build into 10 or 12 units of story to create this one book that needs to feel dense and rich and episodic and also brief. You know, a 60-page book, it's nothing really. And yet, if you do the job right, yeah, it is an act of condensing one's ability to tell story. I think that's really, and the collaborative side for me, that's been a huge thing, because I was just books for years. I was books, I did about 40 books, and you know, that's just like a despot, just God on the page, because nobody else is coming and making it look much prettier by drawing something. Like when you do scripts, no one's acting or adding music and you know, basically tying up your shoes for you. And it's wonderful when you start working collaboratively in a comics or any kind of collaborative medium. That changes how you think about what you do, I think. It's a huge shift as a writer to start not looking at, because I know some people that look at collaborative medium and think, I'm not sure I'd like that. I'm losing control. Personally, I find it just inspiring. It's just wonderful.
Well, thank you, as always, to James and to Guy for talking about what they've been doing and what they've got coming up for 2000 AD and the magazine. A fascinating little chat, and hope you've enjoyed it. Join us in 2 weeks' time when we're going to be bringing you more from the House of Tharg with another thrill-powered episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Splendid birth for your girth, let's.
Alert! Alert! Full power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline. And follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.